Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Today, we'll be focusing on Story County and on events taking place this weekend just before the 4th of July. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, back with my always knowledgeable co-host, Paul Wearson. Welcome back, Paul.
Well, Susan, good to be back. I was up in Northeast Iowa in Decorah, my alma mater, Luther College, where we do great music. And I love being up in the hills and all my old haunts. All the Flatlanders down here don't understand how beautiful Northeast Iowa is. And I'm back.
But you came back just in time to suggest our first guest, Dr. Michael Golimo, head of the music department and director of bands at Iowa State. When I read about him on the ISU webpage, I was astonished that he can still make time to direct the Ames Municipal Band.
And I'm astonished he can be here this early in the morning. And I believe that the Thursday night band concerts at Banshell Park are one of the musical treasures of Central Iowa, and I mean that. Full disclosure, like several people from Story City, I come up every Thursday and watch the band concert and enjoy it. And occasionally, I've had a chance to substitute as MC.
Well, you enjoy your conversation with Michael, but before you begin, I want to let our listeners know what else we have in store. Louise O'Donnell, Secretary of the Slater Area Historical Society, is here to announce the opening of the addition of Heritage Hall in Slater this weekend and the exhibit, Slater and Story County in the Great War. Then we'll have a quick report from Barb Wheelock about some of the work of Inclusive Ames.
And for those of you who tuned in late, I have the pleasure of talking with Dr. Michael Golimo, director of the Ames Municipal Band. The 4th of July parade is coming up. Now, the band is going to be involved, as usual, right, Michael?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll be involved Tuesday morning.
What are you going to do? You're going to have a few band members on a float, or what?
We'll have about half of the band. We'll have about 30 band members or so, and we'll be on a float. We're always fortunate. There's a person who lives just north of town, John Riley, lets us use his hay rack, which is terrific. And Steve Hansen has an antique tractor that pulls us in there. And we'll be playing Stars and Stripes Forever by Sousa throughout the parade.
That's fantastic. I remember when I was in band in high school, it sounds kind of tacky, but we played Hey, Look Me Over. Does that sound familiar? That kind of dates me, too, really.
Sure.
Well, tell us about the wonderful band concerts on Thursday night, Michael. This is just a thrill to have you here because I never miss a concert.
Yeah, I know because we see you there every Thursday. It's special. It's something that's very unique to Iowa. We tell people across the state that we have municipal bands, and they question that sometimes because most states have community bands where people just come together. But Iowa is unique in that we have what's known as a municipal band, and it's something that started in the 1920s. And Carl King and a person named Major Landers kind of petitioned the state legislature to ask them to put out a bill that would encourage local governments to provide funding for a town band. And it passed. And actually, since then, there's 28 other states that have passed similar legislation. And we think there's about three or four other countries that have such a law. So I think Iowa understood that there's a lot of talent in the community, and we don't have professional sports. We don't have the big cities. Iowa's made up of a lot of small towns. And so what they did was they kind of solidified each town having their own band, and most towns have their own beautiful band shell of some type, too, or a place to perform. And it's something that really started in Iowa, and it goes back to the Music Man. Mason City was River City with Meredith Wilson. And,
oh, yes, yes.
That's part of our heritage. And so that's something very unique to Iowa and something very special. And our municipal band, the Ames Municipal Band, only exists in June and July, and we perform every Thursday in June and July. And then we do some other municipal-type events. We do services on Memorial Day at the Ames Municipal Cemetery, and we participate in the Boone Municipal Band Festival each year. And, of course, we do the 4th of July Parade, which for us is always about halfway through our season. So, you know, it seems like we've just started, but really we're almost halfway done already. And I think that's sad because it means the summer is about halfway done, too.
Well, the band is so enjoyable, and I often call Michael the Arthur Fiedler of Ames, because it really is a Pops concert. Now, I think a week ago we did Rossini as well as Leroy Anderson.
Right.
So that's right. The typical pop concert mix. And I love the choices you make because it's show music. And also you have a vocal guest every week.
That's correct. Yeah, we use the philosophy that we try to have something for everyone. So, you know, seniors, middle-aged people, millennials, little kids, we try to do something. And like you said, we have a formula. We try to do something Hollywood or Broadway. We do light classical works each week, like Rossini or Von Suppé. This week we're doing the Light Cavalry Overture, which is, traditional. And we do some marches. We'll do waltzes. We always have a vocal soloist, and we often have an instrumental soloist. And we just try to mix it up. We try to have a little bit of something. We always do the national anthem. We close with a hymn tune followed by a march, which is usually by Sousa. And we use kind of the entertainment philosophy that Sousa used, where it was something for everybody. And it was bringing quality music and not just novelty numbers, but quality pieces out to the people. And
it's a very good mix, and I
really
think
that
one of the highlights every year is performance by Simon Estes.
Right.
That's already gone by this year.
It has.
You know, what's the crowd estimate when he comes? Is that 3,000 people?
You know, there was one year, because we always have somebody from the city that supports us that usually does a crowd check, and they estimate what it is. But there was one year that they estimated we were over 4,000 people
at Banshell Park.
It was elbow to elbow. And we remember looking out, from the stage, and it was just like, wow, look at this. And he's been with us. Every year I've been doing the band, he's been with us. So this is my 15th year. And we recently had Simon's 15th appearance with us. And
you must be the attraction.
Well, I'm his boss at Iowa State, so that's part of it, too.
How far back does the Angie Municipal Band go?
It started as a cornet band in 1884. That was kind of the roots. And then it was formalized in 1924 as an official town band where the city, I think, provided some funding for them. And they had a little gazebo-type space, I believe, at Banshell Park, which is where they performed. And then the current Banshell, which is superb, was built in 1934. I think it was premiered in 35.
It was a WPA project.
It was, and it was a big deal. Albert Austin Harding from the director of bands at the University of Illinois was here, and it was a big to-do when they put it in. Carl King's band performed at the inaugural concert, I believe, from Fort Dodge. And it has served us well. It's a wonderful facility. They used to rehearse underneath, which we do not anymore, but they used to rehearse underneath. There's a whole basement area, which is where we store horns and our players warm up prior to the concert. It's because it has the scalped, they have concerts there, they call it Ames on the Half Shell because it looks like a clam. I mean, it has that old Hollywood
That's
Bowl.
That's a Friday night event.
Yeah, Friday night, yeah. And it looks like the Hollywood Bowl where it shoots the sound out. And we know that between selections, we tell the band members not to talk on stage because somebody in the tuba section could be whispering to the person next to him, and somebody 50 yards away can hear it like they're right next to him. It has that, Greek amphitheater. Yeah, there's something, the Greeks knew what they were doing with those amphitheaters. It kicks out the sound.
Well, another thing I like is the opening acts, you might say, the different groups that come in at 7 o'clock and warm up the audience.
That's right, yeah.
And you have a nice eclectic mix there. You have vocalists and you have other bands. We had the Ballard Band last week.
Last week was the Ballard Community Band. The week before was the Shy of a Dozen Men's a cappella group from Iowa State, who was superb. This year, the first concert, we had a new group. We had the Barn Owl Band, which is kind of a mid-Iowa, that's a terrific group. They're very well known. Soon we're going to have the Blue Moon Group with Reggie Greenlaw, who's a local vocalist and guitarist. And we've had the this week we have the Ames Choral Society with Steve Hoyfeld. They're doing the pre-show at 7, and then they're also performing with us during the 8 o'clock portion of the concert. Every week we'll have a brass quintet, the collegiate brass, the Iowa Collegiate Methodist Brass. We usually end the year with the German Oompa Meisters Band, which is always fun.
They walk around in lederhosen, I think.
They kind of serenade out in the crowd. But it's always something a little bit different at 7 o'clock, just to kind of welcome people and get them in the mood, and it's a great Iowa tradition. And people bring their lawn chairs, a little bit of bug spray, and you just kind of you know you're outside, you're out of the house, you've got the TV off, and you're out among members of the community, and it's free.
I really like the price. You know, yeah. What I noticed after attending year after year is that there's sort of a camaraderie. People sit in the same area.
That's right, yeah.
This wonderful couple pedals in on a dual bike and parts.
Yeah, I think that's Ken Anderson.
Yeah. And they are always there.
Yeah.
And so it's lawn chairs and some folks out on a blanket. I remember there's a family. I think they probably moved away. But I watched them grow up. They were all on a blanket in the front of the audience. And the kids got older and older. And it was just like a part of my family.
Yeah. You know, out in the audience to the side, there's a little park, there's a swing set and things like that for kids. And occasionally we'll be playing something. For instance, I know when Simon Estes sings, all of a sudden the activity at the park just stops. And people are just like, wow.
That's
true,
isn't it?
Yeah, there are some moments where all of a sudden the swings just, you know, all of a sudden, for whatever reason, they all of a sudden become engrossed. And it's like, wow, let's, you know, what's going on here?
Another thing I've noticed, we hardly ever get rained out.
We're very fortunate that way.
It's been a while.
In 15 years, I think we've been rained out 3 times, and one of those 3 was the dedicatory concert when they redid Banshell Park, and it was out of commission for a year when we did concerts.
Oh, yeah, we should say that for a while. Was it a whole year?
It was a whole year.
And we did the concerts out by the Campanile
exactly.
At Iowa State.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they refurbished it. But, you know, they enhanced it without altering the period flavor.
Right.
There's still the patina on the metal, on the copper.
Right.
And when you go down in the basement, you can tell that that's the original place, you know, and it's just a marvelous facility. Thank God for the WPA.
Yes. And, you know, I have some photos of Banshell Park, and I think they exist on the Ames Historical Society website, but there's pictures of Banshell Park without the sheet metal on it, with just the metal frame.
Is that right?
Yeah, just the beams and stuff. And it is really neat to see that and to see horses out in the park there. And it's pretty neat. But that would be 1934. Our neighbor, when we lived on the south side of town, our next-door neighbor, their grandfather did the sheet metal, and he was a sheet metal worker. They had stories about how he worked at Banshell Park and how much fun it was to put that together.
Well, the other night, someone sang, you had your guest vocalist sang Over the Rainbow beautifully, and I was out front, and here was this hawk circling in the sky and surging with the music. And I accused Mike of paying that bird off.
You know, that bird is there every week.
That
hawk is there every week.
Yeah, it's it's out in nature, and it's framed by trees around. And if you haven't gone to the Banshell concert in Ames, you're missing out on one of the gems available for free in central Iowa. And Dr. Mike Galimo is always making good choices musically. And we can't leave this without talking about John Burnett Larkin.
Yep, John.
How long has John been the MC?
I'm
always honored to replace him.
Yes. You know, I think John has been with us 15 years. Prior to him, I think Bob Lindemeyer, I think, was the MC for the municipal band concerts. But I believe he retired when I started. And I remember having to look for somebody. And John at that time was becoming the announcer with the marching band. I think it was I started at Iowa State in 99, and I think John became our marching band announcer in our second or third year. And somehow we found John, and he announces for a lot of the Iowa State sporting events. He does the women's gymnastics. He does volleyball. He does lots of, I believe he does wrestling, but he does lots of events at Iowa State, and we're happy to have him.
Unusual sort of radio voice.
Right. You know? Very engaging. Yeah,
yeah,
you know,
very
kind of pulls
engaging
people.
And very good at spontaneous humor. And by the way, it's not just the live concert out there in the park. It's broadcast live on KSI.
It is.
Ames. And also you're on Channel 12.
TV 12, yeah.
So how you can see this, and there's a rebroadcast on KSI too, so it's rebroadcast later. When's that rebroadcast?
They put them on Sunday mornings, I believe, at 9 o'clock is when they put them on. And they're on throughout the year. You know, all of a sudden in February, I'll be channel surfing and on TV 12. There we are. And, you know, it's funny because you watch the concert and you have no idea what the temperature is. And once in a while, and sometimes when it's, you know, 95 degrees, it gets tough to focus and do your best. And you see a concert, you go, oh, yeah. And you look at it on TV and it looks like it's 70 degrees and you don't realize, boy, that was a scorcher that night. That
well,
was
you know,
really
hot. I guess what you want to do is punch that up on February 20th when there's a blizzard outside.
Yes.
And you can re-identify with the marvelous heat and sweat of summer.
Yeah, you know, and most of the time the weather's perfect, but occasionally, you know, you have one of those hot ones. And
well, I am very impressed with your musicians. You have to audition to be in the band initially, don't you?
Yes, somewhat. We want to know what their experience is. We use kind of a tenure system, and you know, once you've been in for a year, you're kind of in for life, for you know, for better or worse, until you tell us, you know, you can't do it.
Well, you know, they're not incompetent. You know what I like? The last concert of the year. You have people stand up for how many decades they've been in the band?
Right.
10 years, 20. And tell me, there's some over 50, aren't there, Mike?
We recognize all the players at the last concert. And actually, we have two players that have been in the band over 60 years.
60
And
years.
I think Terry Adams has been in the – I think this is his 65th year in the band, which is – it's just ridiculous. And they're still bringing it. They're still doing it and playing well and –
and then you have a great piccolo player.
Yep.
Oh, man, which, on the Stars and Stripes.
Heather Imhoff will be performing that on tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is our patriotic concert, which seems early, but we don't want to have that concert after the 4th of July.
Well, yeah, I think it's close enough in proximity that everyone knows it's sort of a prelude to the holiday.
Yeah.
And there are so many great pieces written. I'm just thinking of all the great medleys I've heard with American music, a mixture of marches and things that are more semi-classical and pop. And it's possible to put together a great musical program, just some patriotic music.
Right. And, you know, that's what we're doing for this week's concert. It's hard to believe the 4th of July is as close as, you know, it's less than a week away. It comes up on us every year. But tomorrow night's concert is all patriotic music. We're doing a couple of Sousa marches. One of the things that we do traditionally at this concert is we recognize members of the military and veterans. We do the medley of the armed forces. The service marches, Air Force, you know, all of, and we have those members of the military stand and be recognized when we play their song, and that's always
really
special.
It's really terrific because you can see the World War II vets, some of them struggling to get out of their wheelchair to stand up for their service and saluting, and of course that's great music. You know, I think that some of the great American music, of course, marches. I think all the service hymns or service songs are terrific. The Coast Guard was one of my favorites. You don't hear it that often.
It's a great piece of music.
It is a great
Semper
piece.
Semper Paratus, yes.
Yeah, right.
Being in Iowa, being a landlocked state, you know, we have members of the Air Force stand, and there's always lots of people in Navy and Marines and Army. And we get to the Coast Guard, and we rarely have someone.
Right. Where are the Coasties, they call them, you know? That's a highlight that if you didn't do it, people would miss it, you know.
Yes.
I think that it's a real tribute to the veterans. It's an opportunity for people to – I'm proud when I stand up for the Army. You know, so I'm a vet too. And I really think that the other thing that we have to get everyone know is that we have a lot of folks who are older, but it's a profound mix. There are kids running around, young families. And I think that for a lot of folks, this is their exposure to classical music and semi-classical music.
Very true.
And they may not tune in on the radio and hear that kind of music, or they might not seek it out. But if they go to the concert, you're giving them exposure to something they normally don't hear. When I look around the audience, I'm thinking, a lot of these folks probably haven't heard Rossini very often.
That's true. And, you know, that's something that Sousa's band did too. He toured the country, played big towns, big cities, small towns, and he was playing overtures to Wagner operas before they were at the Met in New York City. He was bringing really classical music around the country long before it was in the big cities here.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you find time to do the municipal band because I know you have so many responsibilities at Iowa State and that you're a very, very busy guy. I'm very happy you came here today, too. And Michael, let's review. We have this band shell concert every Thursday, all June and all July at 8 p.m. And then every week there's a 7 o'clock pre-show by a mixture of musical groups and different kinds of music, vocal and instrumental. And you don't want to miss the Ames Bandshell concerts. It's a real treat and a real tribute to Ames that this continues. I know there's a musical band in Boone.
Mm-hmm.
How many others do you know about?
Yeah, there's quite a few. The famous one is Fort Dodge, which is now known as the Carl King Band. He was a legendary march composer. But Des Moines has one, Cedar Rapids. Waterloo has one, but we know there's lots of small towns that have these types of groups. And Nevada has one, Ankeny has one, and like we were talking about, many of them go back to the 20s or the 30s. They've been around for many years, and lots of them have beautiful bandshells in their parks. The bandshell in Fort Dodge is gorgeous. I think the one we have in Ames, I think, is the best in the state. I love what we have. It was
another thing they have is the light show. We forgot to mention the light show. Folded into these arches are all kinds of lights of different colors.
Yep.
And during the march, at the end of the show, they have someone manipulating those lights. By that time, it's dark enough
that
you can see the contrast. And they're different colored lights, and they go on and off. And
every strain of the march, they'll change the lights up. And
whoever does the lights has some sense of music.
Right.
they change at the right times.
Yeah.
And I really think that, this is a fine tradition. It's going to be, Michael, hope you stay a long time.
Yeah, I hope to be doing it. You know, you talked about the department and the responsibilities there. This is my last week as department chair for music and theater at Iowa State. I'm stepping down after Friday of this week, and Don Simonson is going to be our new chair. I'll remain as director of bands, but fewer administrative responsibilities.
You're going to wear one less hat.
That's right. You know, and I started that... When I started as department chair, I thought I would do it for 2 or 3 years, and this is now my 12th year. So it's time, and Don is going to do a great job.
Listen, that's the way a lot of people approach marriage. It's going to be 1 or 2 years.
Well, we're not leaving. We're not leaving. But
No, I'm glad to see you'll still be involved.
We'll do more teaching and more conducting.
Well, everybody out there who's listening today, don't miss the Thursday night concerts at the Bandshell Park in Ames. It's a fantastic place. We even have a professional bird performing, doing aerials, with the wonderful Dr. Michael Galimo.
And occasional train goes
by. Yeah, we have a train that goes by. There's some things that you just can't stop. Dr. Michael Galimo, our guest today on Local Talk, and the Bandshell Concerts every Thursday night, 8 p.m., a mixture of music and wonderful activity before in the 7 o'clock slot. We various musical groups. So, Michael, thank you for coming in so early, and we'll see you Thursday night. If I'm not there, I'm either sick or dead or what?
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Susan, so much.
Well,
thank you for this opportunity.
And to see you out, we have a little preview of the 4th of July. Our
band
engineer,
music.
God does Stars and Stripes Forever.
Perfect. And we'll be concluding tomorrow night's concert.
Our piccolo player is just as good as the one on the record.
The National March of the United States.
It is, yes.
Thank you.
is KHOI Community Radio. And Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, are your hosts for today. Dr. Michael Golimo, director of the Ames Municipal Band, has been talking with Paul about the summer band concerts as well as the band's participation in the 4th of July parade. As you will hear in a minute, the parade will sound a little different from usual this year. The route is a little different from usual as well because of, you'll never guess why, road construction. It starts at Main Street and Clark, just a block from the entrance of City Hall, where Mayor Campbell and the City Council will host a complimentary pancake breakfast from 8:30 to 10:30. The parade will begin at 11, Thursday, July 4th, at the corner of Clark Avenue and Main Street. The parade will head east on Main Street and turn north on Kellogg and then head west on 6th Street before heading south on Burnett and ending west on 5th Street. It's pretty much a square. A map of the parade route will be on our website.
Well, now, you said the parade would sound a little different. What do you mean by that?
We have some new groups joining the parade down the route from the Ames Municipal Band. Okay, HOI's own Paul Hertz will be directing the radio band. These will be battery-powered radios tuned to 89.1 FM, which will play band music down the line. And 25 kids from Beloit Lutheran Services in Iowa are performing a Pots and Pans band. At least that's what I heard. This is going to be really interesting. We'll see how that sounds. And they will be joined by kids from Eastwood Apartment Complex. In another section, the ISU United Native American Student Association will join with drumming, dancing, and singing.
Well, it sounds like a great variety, and I always come to the Ames Parade, and now I'm expecting one to remember.
Well, let me read from the KHOI Facebook page. KHOI Community Radio and Main Street Cultural District would like to invite you to be a part of our Boombox Star Spangled Band in the 4th of July parade with KHOI. We want to showcase the beauty and diversity in our community through music, song, dance, and art. We need volunteers to help with creating colorful banners to showcase ideas of community diversity and unity. Participating in a banner-making workshop on June 29th from 5 to 10 p.m. And the studio is set, I mean the area outside the studio, the lobby is set up right now with the supplies for that. We will need volunteers to manage the workshop and make banners. It will be held at 410 Douglas Avenue in Ames. Refreshments and supplies will be provided. You're welcome to bring your own. Dancers, musicians, drummers, and anyone interested in actively participating in the 4th of July parade is welcome to come. Not to the banner. Well, you could come to the banner making, but just come on the 4th. A 30-minute walk with a party at KHOI afterwards. Showcase your culture and talent. And boombox carriers. People with boomboxes or some sort of technology that amplifies sound to be used during the 4th of July parade. We welcome all participants. You can contact us at 515-292-2878 or email us at khoiradio@gmail.com with any questions or inquiries. And now we'll have a little sample of Native American drumming.
Well, this is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. And we've spent a lot of time on what will be happening at Ames this 4th of July. But I know in South Story County, there's always a big celebration in Slater.
In preparing for this program, I learned that they expect 10,000 people for their festival. That's in a town of 1,500 people. So
yes, I've been there many times. And as a matter of fact, my nephew and his son performed there. They were the featured act one year on the stage there. And so I went down and enjoyed the Slater 4th of July. And it was fun. I was surprised that in a town that size, it was that big of a festival and that well attended, because it was really, there's a stage out there, and if my memory serves me right, on the back, there's the flag raising at Iwo Jima, I think, painted on this wall. And they performed, my nephew and his son performed in front of that, and I stayed a long time that day because it was a fantastic, fantastic festival.
And, of course, they have the Ballard Community Band for their parade.
And, of course, they played last week at the Ames Bandshell concert, so I've already had a preview of the Ballard Band, and they sounded very good, and they're a very accomplished unit.
Well, there's a special event or series of events in Slater this year, and we have Louise O'Donnell to tell about what's going on at the Slater Historical Association Heritage Hall. And I think they're going to start tomorrow night.
Friday night.
Friday night.
Right. We are having an opening reception for Slater and Story County in the Great War. It's our new exhibit. But in tandem with that, we are also opening up our brand new addition, which we've added to the museum in the last year. So this is its great unveiling. And we're very excited, and the exhibit is going to be over the top, as they say, in World War One, which meant they came out of the trenches and crossed no man's land, and they went over the top. So about a year ago, year and a half ago, we said we needed more room. Our mission is to accept the memories and the artifacts of the community. And we were accepting a lot of artifacts. So we were overflowing, and we made the big step, and we had some great benefactors that helped us out to be able to add this additional 1,800 square feet, which is a great open space, and we have set up the exhibits. We've been working like crazy to get that all done. So that will be what happens on Friday evening from 4 to 8 is the grand opening reception. But we're also open every day during the 4th of July weekend. So it would be from 2 to 4 on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then Tuesday the 4th.
During regular times, during non-holidays, what are the hours?
Right now we're open on Thursdays from 10 to 2, but we always have posted, we're on our Facebook, and it's out there, to call any one of us, and we will open it up and give a docent tour to anyone who's in town. And often what we have are people from out of town who have great memories about Slater.
What sort of community support made this happen? Did the business people get together? And
one of the great things that happened right at the beginning is that the bank in town, South Story Bank and Trust, gave us a very generous donation, and that started the ball rolling.
Yeah, you always need a seed.
We did, and then we had an anonymous donor who came forward with $50,000 in matching funds, and
that's
another donor
who lived
in Slater for a very long time and now is in Florida and endowed us with another $50,000.
Now, do you have any part-time staff or anyone who...
We have no, it's totally volunteer, and we have about 4 people doing most of the work. We have a board of 7 people.
Now, what's your role?
I'm the secretary. I also do the publicity, and I do the exhibits.
So you're a highly motivated person who probably puts in more time than you plan.
True. But I'd like to clean my house.
But you grew up in Slater, and I think you were a family of 6 children. Is that right?
No.
No. So how many?
14.
14.
Oh.
I mean, was there one bathroom or what?
Well, when we moved, we had 3 at that point. Then finally, in fact, my sister still lives in the big house with all the bedrooms. My mother was a founder of the Slater Historical Association, and so I've sort of thrown in the oar, and so as another sister, 2 other sisters, who are on the board. So, yeah, we're pretty active in it, and it makes my mother happy. So,
how are the How are the displays handled there? Do you go in some sort of segment, decade by decade or era by
era? No, it's by subject matter. And so we have a great 1939 kitchen on display with the old icebox and the old sink and the stove, a genuine stove. We have a big business area. We have an old dental office, including all the hand-pedaled drills and ghastly kind of equipment that Dr. Knott had when we were growing up. We have the big military exhibit. That's where the World War I exhibit will be set up. And that is just getting finished off today. We're polishing it up. It's all in the new part of the building. We have a display of wedding dresses going back to before 1900. It goes on and on.
What's one of the highlights of Slater history? Is there...
This is fun. The town moved. It didn't exist, really. And
it moved. The town moved.
Yes, it did.
That's a good...
Where Sheldahl is, which is just in the corner of Boone, Polk, and Story, it was predicted that the railroads would cross and there would be a big boom. Well, the railroad decided to move the crossing to where late Slater is located, and it was called Sheldahl Crossing for quite a long time. And so they moved the churches, they moved the buildings, everything. And we actually have a book that we've published about it.
So what's the centennial date then? If you know, the first 100 years, it would have been, have you had your centennial?
Yes, we've had, what is it? It's 125 years. It's 1889.
1889. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, my hometown, Story City, is 1955, we had our centennial, so we were 1855.
You're older than
so
we are.
So we've had sesquicentennial. And one event we did for that was a cemetery walk.
We did. We've done two.
I thought you
we've
had.
Done two.
I thought that we may have even done a program on that because that's just fantastic. I was able to play uncle,
right,
who I still vaguely remember.
Right.
I portrayed him by his tombstone up in Story
City. Isn't that fun?
Oh, yeah. It sure is. And the real challenge, you have to have someone to write the script, you know, to have a script so that people know how that person fits in.
Yes,
and if you can get a relative, like in my case.
That's what we did.
Yeah, that gives them more incentive.
We did have one portrayer who stood in. There was a family that was living in a hotel. At one time, there were three or four hotels in Slater. And the family died of smallpox, the whole family. And so he was there to tell that story.
What a moving story was.
The stories of World War I, the way this came together is we had the newspapers from 1917, 1918, the real newspapers, and the boys wrote letters home which were published. And there was one story, the boy was killed. And they had the grieving, the obituary, the whole thing, and he was found alive.
Is that right?
Yes.
What a great story.
You know, and these stories bubbled up as I researched it. And so in the exhibit are the soldiers' own words. If we're talking about a battle, here's a kid describing what it was like. One of the quotes that I love is he said, I have seen and done things that I dare not write about.
Yes, that war. And now we know so much more about how war lingers in the minds and hearts of people who've been through combat. And my uncle was in World War I. He was a ambulance driver out in Maryland. He never got over to France. But you know, the strange thing was a lot of the boys who were in the war left before finishing high school. And they let these boys go back and re-enroll in high school and play against 17-year-olds in basketball. That was not fair.
There actually was sort of a GI Bill.
Yeah.
The government did pay for some boys to go back to college and go back to school.
And so, Burton always spoke well of the war. And I even played. I shouldn't have done this. I played in his World War I tunic and wore it out, crawling through the mud.
Yeah. A lot of the artifacts were treated very casually.
Oh, sure.
We're
we
thrilled
didn't
to have
that.
Maybe five or six uniforms, and we've got equipment. We've even got one boy's skivvies with the buttons up the front. It's pretty cute. My own experience is that my grandfather met my grandmother in France. She was a French woman, and they came over. So we have that whole story actually up on a board because it's about the romance. I mean, I did the background research of how it worked and what the guys had to go through and how they brought the women over, and they actually had camps in France that were teaching the women some English and some American customs before they got on the boats.
Well, you know, you think of war brides in connection with World War II, but mm-hmm. they happened in World War I also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There were about 10,000.
10,000? Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing that World War II in some ways has obscured World War I.
We don't pay
enough attention to that.
Do you know how many men were killed? This is total. 10.8 million men were killed. And then 21 years later, we do it again.
Yeah, and it was a terrible war. That's probably the worst war in history for the individual soldier because it was trench warfare, and there were not only the
Pershing did not believe in trench warfare. He had them going over the top.
Yep, and I think, but you see, it was a stalemate before that. The French and we lost. They lost a whole generation of British men.
Yes, they did because the higher class were the officers, and they believed in leading their men over the top, and they got shot. Yeah. I was going to add in the Spanish influenza. In Camp Dodge, 700 men died from influenza.
Right. You know, I've read Omar Bradley's autobiography. He was in West Point. He had graduated, gone to school with Eisenhower. All his classmates were having an exciting time in France. And, you know, to advance in the Army, you have to have some combat experience. You know where Omar Bradley was? Camp Dodge. Hmm. You know what he was doing every day? Writing letters to next of kin because bodies were stacked outside the mess hall. All these men were dying of the flu.
Mm-hmm.
It was the low point of Omar Bradley's life at Camp Dodge.
So in our exhibit, there are literally 24 panels, each of them 7 feet by 3 feet. And each one addresses a subject. And there's one on the Spanish flu. There's one on the women's role. There's two on the casualties of war, which tell the true stories of the Slater boys, some horrific things. There is a panel that discusses on the home front all the rationing that took place. It was very entertaining, entertaining. The motto that the Slater women used was, if you can't eat it, you can it, can't you?
Hey, if you can't
all
eat
of these
it,
things were from the newspaper. It was it took me a long time because once you start reading a newspaper, you keep reading.
Well, there were so many slogans, and you know, just a week ago, we had a woman up at the Story City Historical Society who did a whole afternoon on World War One music.
Oh, I love that. We've got a whole collection of old music
that we've
got out.
Music, mm-hmm. and it was just a fantastic. Once again. World War II music has obscured some of that. You know, we have the obvious ones over there,
But, oh, we've got Katie. One was Joe was the only one who marched on time, and that was a song. I mean, they wrote a song about anything, and really we were only in the war from April 1917 to November 1918, and they didn't even ship boys over for quite a long time because Pershing wanted everybody trained. He did not want them reporting to any Frenchmen. Except the African American soldiers, they could report to the Frenchmen.
Well,
it was a huge segregation.
Louise O'Donnell, you've just really represented the museum well, and this is something I want you to repeat about when this is happening, this grand opening, so people have the idea they should come to Slater for this.
Well, we are going to be open for the opening reception on June 30, which is Friday, and it's from 4 to 8 p.m. Refreshments will be served. Everybody is welcome, and our Heritage Hall Museum is at 318 First Avenue in Slater.
That's very good, and that will continue through the fabulous 4th of July
celebration. Yes, it will. And if people just want to see it, they just need to give us a phone call.
Thank you, Louise O'Donnell, for representing Slater so beautifully.
Thank you.
And telling that story about the boy who was eventually found alive.
I get very emotional.
Yes, I'm a war historian.
Come see the exhibit.
It sounds made to order for me.
Oh,
wow.
Come see it.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
You're going to have trouble getting back to Story City.
I was unaware of this entirely. I am learning today from Louise.
Well, that's what we do on KHOI
on Local Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you, Louise.
And we want to play a little song to see you out.
Oh, a World War I song, yeah.
It's also by Sousa, but it's... This is KHOI Community Radio, and host Paul Wearson has been talking with Louise O'Donnell about the exhibit Slater and Story County in the Great War at the newly expanded Heritage Hall of the Slater Area Historical Association. Barb Wheelock of Inclusive Ames is here with us to tell about some of the work that group has been doing. Hi, Barb.
Hello.
Could you share with our listeners the good news you had from last night's City Council meeting?
We were pleased that the City Council passed the resolution reaffirming the public safety function of local law enforcement, which basically is a resolution that is exactly that. It's reaffirming what our police department is already doing with regards of not acting as immigration agents.
Well, if they're already doing this, why is it important to have this resolution?
Well, we wanted it to be clear to everyone in the community that this is the policy that they're operating under. We just feel that it makes the community safer in general if people are comfortable talking with the police about crimes or witnessing crimes. And so by having the City Council bring this up and reaffirm it, it makes it clear that the city is behind this and just gives it a little bit more publicity like now. So
now, I was able to hear the debate on this the first time that it was presented to the council by the Ames Human Relations Committee. So I heard something that I was quite impressed with. You often hear about undocumented immigrants who are stopped because they have a traffic violation, a light out or something, and then deported. So what's the policy here with the Ames Police?
I wasn't directly involved in this, but my understanding is it's basically that the Ames Police Department are not immigration agents, so it's not their job to investigate someone's status as whether they're legal or not. So they just enact the laws of the city and the state.
Who worked on getting this passed? Inclusive Ames, and how was this done?
So an Inclusive Ames group, the Safe Community Committee, initiated this, and I'm not familiar with everybody that was involved, but I know Cheryl Benson, Matthew Goodman, Rick Exner, Betty Baird was involved, and initially they met with the city attorney, the police department, the city council, the mayor, to talk about this, get their input on it, and then they presented it to the Human Relations Commission, which in turn presented the resolution to city council. It was a long process. They did a lot of work.
And this is a subgroup of the APA,
the
Ames Progressive Alliance,
yes,
which has a monthly program on KHOI,
oh, okay,
a half-hour program every month. And they talk about other projects that they have. For example, they worked pretty hard to get the city to pay attention to getting a solar farm.
Mm-hmm.
And we now know that's already in the works, and Don Compton was here to talk about that. But I think it really got its fire under it mm-hmm. when the Ames Progressive Alliance picked it up.
Yes.
And so are there any other things that the SAFE Communities Committee has been working on?
Well, actually, we're in the midst of a project to distribute signs. We'd like to see signs throughout the community that demonstrate what we feel the Ames community is, which is welcoming and diverse. So we've spent some time working on the signs. Ashley Ripke from Ripke Design designed a beautiful sign for us. And we now have the signs. We had a group of people that pre-ordered, so they're in the process of picking up their signs, and we have more signs to sell for people that are interested.
Now, signs, you mean yard signs?
Yard signs, yes, yes. And the yard signs basically say, all are welcome here, inclusive Ames, all are welcome here, strength and diversity, and then they have beautiful graphics with them.
I remember the phrase, hate has no home here. Is this actually on the sign?
No. That my understanding of that is that was developed by a neighborhood group in Chicago, and it's really a cool story behind it. Some young kids were involved in developing the logo, and they have exclusive rights to that. You can go online and download their sign, but they ask you that you not change it in any way. And we really wanted to have Ames on our sign, to have it be a local sign. So
once again, what is the wording on the sign?
So the wording is inclusive Ames, all are welcome here, strength in diversity. And then, like I said, beautiful graphics, beautiful colors.
And you have some diverse languages, as I recall.
Yeah, yes. So the all are welcome here is repeated in lots of different languages. It's in the background of the sign.
If someone is interested in getting one of these signs, how do they do that?
Well, there's a couple different ways right now. They can go to the Ames Progressive Alliance picnic, which is July 9th at Brookside Park, from 4 to 7 p.m., and it's a family function. It's a potluck picnic. And then if you can't do that, you can also email the Ames Progressive Alliance, and it's basically, that's the email, amesprogressivealliance@gmail.com. And then they'll contact me, and I'll contact you to make arrangements.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And you know, what would have happened if we hadn't welcomed Albert Einstein as a refugee?
Mm-hmm.
Think
yep.
about that.
Yep. Yep.
We've been talking with Barb Wheelock, who has been working with others as part of the
Safe Community Committee.
Safe Community Committee, under the auspices of Inclusive Ames, which mm-hmm. was first pulled together by the Ames Progressive Alliance.
Yep.
A lot of our listeners may not be aware that Inclusive Ames was one of the groups of concern that came from a large meeting last fall in the Ames Progressive Alliance, and perhaps there are other things that will be popping up
yes.
from that.
Yes.
APA has a monthly half-hour report on KHOI, as I mentioned before, and they're working on many new projects. And as Barb announced, picnic at Brookside Park in the Maple Shelter. It's a family potluck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Family and community fun on Sunday, July 9th from 4 to 7 p.m. There will be food, fun, games, and music. Invite your family, friends, and neighbor. Everyone is welcome.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today, Susan Franson, Paul Wearson. Other voices you heard were Michael Galimo, Louisa O'Donnell, and Barb Wheelock. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during this program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Songs you heard were Stars and Stripes Forever by John Philip Sousa and Sneak Up from the CD Midnight Express. When Johnny Comes Marching Home by Mitch Miller Chorus, and that's another John Philip Sousa. This program was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Following this program at 8 a.m., we are airing Democracy Now! Morning Masterpieces will resume at 9 a.m. We've made this change in light of the rapidly changing events in the national news. We want to provide you with the latest news in the most timely fashion possible. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! With headline news at the top of the hour. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Mary Greeley Medical Center, providing inpatient and outpatient services on a continuum of care, located at 1111 Duff Avenue in Ames. Find out more information at www.mgmc.org. That's mgmc.org.